From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out there.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. And you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan, live in the flesh. It's been a while. Nice to be here. And nice to see some of you today up at the Windsor Farmers Market, where we did, and I did for the second time, the world's biggest BLT. It was so much fun. The students in the culinary programs at El Molino and Windsor High Schools were the ones who pulled it all together. Was 129 feet long this year, and Glenda Castelli, who is the manager of the Windsor Farmers Market, is going to do what I never did following the first World's Biggest BLT in 2003. She is going to do the paperwork necessary to get a Guinness Book of World Records to actually acknowledge it. I think once a category has been created to be in that category, it's something like 38 pages of documentation. I think I have this right. Currently, there is no category for BLT. And so not only do they have to fill out this 38 pages of documentation, Glenda has to convince them that they need to establish the category. And she's very, very good at that. So thank you, Glenda. And then next year, you definitely want to tune in, because we are going to do it again, beat our own record, and this time do it with complete with the parade and procession of ingredients. We were getting our sea legs on the process today, and the students really did well. And although it's not up yet, I'm hoping... I managed to get worldsbiggestblt.com. I was so surprised it was available. Anyway, I'm hoping there was videos taken, and there's lots of photographs from both the 03 and the 07 BLTs. So I'm hoping that maybe some smart techie at one of the schools is going to want to help me get a website up for that and generate, you know, a lot of interest in next year's sandwich. And they also sold every bit of it. After it was done, students sliced it into about 2 to 2.5 inch wide slices. It was made on ciabatta. And they sold every slice. And I think the market could have actually sold a BLT twice as long. So it was a really fun day. And now we're shifting gears to another thing I love about this season, and that is gourds. Coming up in... I think it's 3 weeks, 4 weeks, on Sunday, October 7th, is Calabash, a celebration of gourds, art, and the garden. It is a benefit for Food for Thought, the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank. It takes place at Food for Thought on Railroad Avenue in Forestville. We've talked about it here on Mouthful before, and I would like to welcome back Doug Gosling and Ron Karp. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
And you have... this tomato must weigh a a couple of pounds at least. You have, these are two tomatoes. Are they from the Food for Thought garden?
They are. Yeah, we harvested them yesterday.
God, they're just gorgeous. Before we go into detail about Kalabash, because there's lots to talk about gourds and the festival itself, let's give an overview, and both of you just jump in as you wish, overview of Food for Thought, what it does and what it is, because it's more than just the food bank.
Well, Food for Thought provides nutritional services and food to about 500 people in Sonoma County that have HIV and AIDS. And something that we added about a year ago was a pantry for the children of our clients. We feed about 50 children, dependent children, that our clients have. We established that because we found that the food that we were giving clients was being shared with their children, which is what you would expect, and then our clients weren't getting proper nutrition. In addition to food, we also provide some housing support, and we have a support group for positive women, and we have the wonderful garden that Doug manages. And something that we also started about a year ago was a project in Africa where we're assisting an agency in Namibia with an agency that does a soup kitchen for HIV-positive kids. A lot of them are orphans, as well as a lot of women with children.
How did you make that connect? You know, what was the mechanism by which that connection came about?
Well, you know, HIV is such a huge problem in Africa, and we felt like if we looked back on our lives 10 or 20 years from now and didn't do anything about this problem in Africa, we just thought about what that would be almost like what happened in the early 80s when HIV first came into the United States, and so many people turned their backs on those people that had AIDS. So we felt like there was something that we really had to do. And there was a local connection as well, because Dr. Mark Nathurda and Dr. Anna Baylor of the Sonoma County HIV Prevention and Care Center had been going to Namibia to help them establish an antiretroviral program for the country. So we had connections in Namibia, and we used those connections to seek out an agency that needed help.
It's a really great thing to do. I didn't know about that dimension of Food for Thought's program. I mean, I admire the program and the garden and everything so much, but that's a really nice dimension to know about as well. Doug, let's talk about the garden.
Okay.
Because, you know, I met you, gosh, in the 80s.
The early 80s.
Yeah, back when it was the Fairlands Institute, mm-hmm. Now Occidental Arts and Ecology Center, and you know, you're the mother of the mother garden. And it's just one of the most magical places I've ever been. And now you've, you know, either extended that magic, created new magic there at the garden in Forestville.
Well, it's true. I guess the building has been there. We're in our eighth year there. Is that correct?
We moved in January of 1999.
99, right. And that one of the first things we did when the building was complete was to install a garden there, because we really felt like it was important not only to surround the building with as much beauty as we possibly could, but also plant a food garden in particular so that clients could really see and be reminded of where their food comes from, and welcome them to come into the garden and garden with us, or harvest themselves, or simply witness this garden. So from the outset, you know, with the opening of the building, there's been a garden there.
Mm-hmm. So. Now, when we were talking about you coming on the show tonight, one of the things you said was that the garden was particularly magical this year. What makes you say that?
It's kind of amazing. It's exploding. I mean, I guess one of the most dramatic examples is that we've had a field in the back of the building since the beginning, and maybe 5 years ago, we actually had a draft horses plow the field on the day of Kalabash, because we wanted to open up that area, and we invited the people who were at Kalabash to sow a cover crop. And it was a wonderful ritual, actually, to do on that day. And since then, I think it's been about 5 years, we've actually had a pumpkin patch back there, and that was the primary place where we grew gourds. Mm-hmm. But this year, we've had an idea, actually for a number of years, that we wanted to actually develop the area back there into something a little more permanent and designed. So at the beginning, actually it might have been only 3 months ago, Rachel Gardner and I, who is the other person who gardeners there, we co-manage the garden, designed a garden. That was a magical process because we worked really well together, mm-hmm. and we did it in a few hours.
Wow.
Because the next day we were having a work party. And we were anticipating people coming and helping us actually dig the beds, and it was so easy. I mean, so from the beginning, it was magical. We had all these people show up, and it was, again, like magic, because we literally dug the whole garden in one day. You know, we actually realized the design that we'd sketched out with flour, you know, the night before with cake flour. And since then, you know, we planted the garden, and I think it was in mid or late May, and now it looks just, it's exploding. And, you know, we're harvesting peppers and tomatoes, and there's corn there, and all kinds of sunflowers, and it just seemed like it happened extremely fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really felt like magic. So I think, this year in particular, because of that, but also, you know, in the older gardens, it feels like things are incredibly profuse and extravagant and happy.
Mm-hmm. So extravagant and happy are two terms that it's really nice to apply them to gardens.
Mm, yeah. And, you know, I work in two gardens. I work at the place in Occidental Arts and Ecology, and I can compare the two. And certainly there's a climate difference, a microclimate difference. Mm-hmm. It's much warmer in Forestville. Mm-hmm. But I'm always amazed at how productive the garden is at Food for Thought, and also how quickly things grow and how happy they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not to compare, but it really feels like it's, in some ways, it's a lot easier to garden there. Mm-hmm. So, and some of it I do think is because there's a magic there.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm remembering correctly, if you're walking from the building, the side of the building, towards the garden and mm-hmm. going through an archway, mm-hmm. to your left is a room where you can sit and have... Will you talk about that? I love that room. And it's like a room made out of willow branches or something?
It's made out of mulberry branches, apple, and willow. And it was Rachel and my idea that we wanted to have a bean room, a space that we could train pole beans up, mm-hmm. And make an enclosed space. And at the time, we had this wonderful volunteer named Alan Chivins, who has now been working at the food bank, I think, for over a year, mm-hmm. as one of the volunteer coordinators. We proposed that he actually build that bean room, which he took on, and this was over 2 years ago, and he's the one who built it. And it has been sort of a landmark of the place. I mean, it's been this great... a great place to plant things, for one thing. We've planted gourds on it. We've planted several varieties of pole beans.
And so the structure serves as trellis, that's what things will grow on it?
Right.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. And this year we planted runner beans on it. And right now it's just ablaze with different kinds of runner bean flowers, you know, scarlet and apricot and bicolored, you know, different kinds of runner beans. And it's been a lot of fun. I mean, we've had a couple of installations in this bean room. Last year we had sort of I don't remember his name, but there was sort of an early 60s. There were beanbag chairs and shag carpeting, and it was really fun. But then the year before, during Calabash, we had a very elegant installation where we had a table set with beautiful china and beautiful embroidered tablecloth and antique furniture. And there was a china plate with a pile of soil in the middle. And it was set to sort of make a statement about, you are what you eat, which is really the soil. Mm-hmm. And that was during Calabash. So anyway, we've had a lot of fun with it. And it's been variously called a bean room and a beaniary and a beanatorium and... So we love it, and I think it's gonna remain.
Well, yeah, it reminds me of I'm not gonna remember his name right now, Michael, I think it is, at TaylorMade Farms.
Michael Presley.
Michael Presley, it is Michael Presley. The Rose Room.
Oh, yeah.
Is that still there? Do you know?
TaylorMade, I doubt it.
Yeah, this was...
He's not there anymore.
I didn't think so. You walked into this farm, and he had gotten, just from the side of the road, he had gotten branches... I guess, dormant branches of roses from all over Sonoma County. And then he'd built this circle with the roses. And there was a door you walked in, and it pointed upwards to the sky, and there was an iron bed in the middle. And he wanted to do it. I think his daughter at the time was 9. And he wanted his daughter to be able to sleep there and wake up covered in rose petals. And it was just one of the sweetest, most touching things I'd seen. And I thought nothing touched me quite the same way until I saw the Bean Room. And it sort of resonated in the same way. Really magical space.
Well, it's amazing what a draw it has. You know, people, I mean, especially during Calabash, but they're, you know, it's almost like a telephone booth. You want to see how many people you can fit in at one time. We've actually created something else there in the new garden. We created a Mexican sunflower room.
Ooh.
Because both Rachel and I really love Mexican sunflowers. Mm-hmm. They're the orange flowered annual that pulls monarch butterflies out of the ethers, I think, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And there's a keyhole bed that you can walk into that has a couple of chairs in it that's surrounded by Mexican sunflowers, and now you can sit there and watch the monarchs, which is just a kick. It's really great.
It sounds like a heavenly place. Yeah. It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. We're talking with Doug Gosling and Ron Karp of Food for Thought, and we're going to come back with more talk. But first, coming up on October 7th, it is Calabash, a festival of gourds. And one of the things you have is music made with instruments made out of gourds. And so what we're going to do here on Mouthful tonight is hear various gourd music, I guess you would say.
It's true.
And this first one we're going to hear is from my collection of Hawaiian music. It's Ya Oe E Kala.
Ai, a oe te la e alohi nei. Ya oe te la e alohi nei, mana vele laua o ta honua. Hoidea e oe a i ounani, ya mala mala ma oi de la gela. Nau i noho i ino e loa kūpau, nā palipa a ida i deia. A ide o e ida nania o himela, ta heneva i o lula me mahalie. Mauna i lohi a ide ona ona, kaula na ida nani me te di e gie.
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. It's Calabash coming up. So that was a Hawaiian chant, Ya'oi Ekala. It's welcoming the sun, and it's dedicated to Kalakaua, as so many of the dances and hula and chants in hula are. Let's jump into Calabash. I hate to leave the garden, so we're going to come back to it. I have more garden questions. But let's talk about how Calabash got started and just exactly what it is.
Let's see. Well, this is our 7th Calabash. That's right. The first year that Rachel and I planted the garden, we planted gourds. And we were trying to think of things to plant in the garden that would draw people's attention to it.
And there's nothing like a gourd arbor.
There is nothing like a gourd arbor.
Your gourd arbor, that's one of the other things I wanted to mention about the garden. A gourd arbor is astonishing.
And this year, I think the gourd arbor over the entrance is as good as it's ever been. It's just amazing. And we planted it a little bit late, and there are these long-handled dipper gourds, extra long-handled dipper gourds, and I swear they grow an inch a day, and I'm sure that by Calabash time, they'll be touching the ground.
My God.
Last year, there was actually one that was almost resting on the ground, so it had a handle on it about probably 5 feet.
Wow.
Yeah. But anyway, we continue to plant things that are that draw people, that attempt to draw people to the garden, because even being across the parking lot, sometimes people don't come into the garden. And so we actually put a lot of effort into picking plants that are really stunning. So the first year we planted gourds, and they did incredibly well there. I mean, we discovered that Forestville is a great place to grow gourds. And we had an idea, and that was actually there's been a a question that we had almost from the outset, and that is, what is the best use of this garden? I mean, not only are we growing food for the clients, but how can it, for one thing, how can it support itself? And it's a small garden, so there was never really a question that we would actually grow a crop that would generate income. Mm-hmm. But I had this idea that because we did so well with gourds, why don't we do something similar to Art for Life, which is the fundraiser that Face to Face has, mm-hmm. where artists donate art and then they have a silent auction, and the proceeds from that is what raises funds to support Face to Face. Let's do a similar thing where we actually invite artists to come and get gourds from the garden, take them away and transform them, turn them into a work of art, donate them back to the food bank, and have a silent auction, a day when mm-hmm. these works of art would be sold. And that's pretty much where that came from. And it took a little while for it to get off the ground. There was a person who was involved the first year, a guy named John Rizzi, who showed up and sort of wanted to take it on because he was a gourd artist, and he's kind of the spark, I think, that uh-huh. that we needed, sort of the salt crystal that precipitated uh-huh. the idea. And we had our first calabash, and that's what happened.
How many artists did you have then, do you recall?
Maybe 60, 65.
Oh, in that first year? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you did get the word out to artists?
We did, yeah. I mean, it was remarkably successful the first year. It was something that everybody was excited about almost from the outset. And I think gourds have so much intrigue and are so compelling to people that it really didn't take too much, to get people excited about it. Mm-hmm. So and one of the great things, too, about Calabash was that the first year we had a wonderful person, Kaisi Horn, who actually owns Quicksilver,
right.
In Forestville. She had a lot of connections with artists, and she mm-hmm. really helped make those connections, both with gourd artists, but also with people who have never worked with gourds before. And one of the things that makes Calabash interesting still is that a lot of the artists who take a gourd and make something out of it are not gourd artists.
Or artists at all.
Or artists at all, it's true.
At least the case of one this year.
Who would that be?
Yes, it will be my first public piece. I think it's my first piece of public art, or art out into the public.
Oh, great.
I've done other things, but, for pleasure and fun and to wear.
It's your gourd coming out party.
Yes, it's my gourd coming out party. I'm very excited about it. Mm. It's really, just working with a gourd is magical in itself. And it's, you sort of let, what I've done, because you asked me, three or four years ago that we started talking about this, and really, I've just let the gourd talk to me, and I'm not doing what I thought I would do, and it's been very much not a cerebral process for me, it's just really been having this gourd in my mind, and taking it with me, and I've taken it in my mind many, many places. So
I think that's sort of a common experience. I think one of the reasons why people love working with gourds is that the gourds do talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the gourd is what suggests what ought to come
mm-hmm.
to the artist. And, again, what makes the event interesting is that a lot of artists who are in Calabash are not gourd artists, but they bring their medium, the kind of art they do, to the gourd.
Mm-hmm.
And so the spectrum of stuff that we have is pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of traditional things that people make with gourds, like rattles and masks and mm-hmm. drums and things like that, which are really wonderful. But we also have people do things with with beads and with silver and with people who are jewelers and people mm-hmm. who paint and do a lot of other kinds of art.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring that to the gourd, and that makes the art really varied and interesting and, some pretty conceptual sometimes.
Do people do artist statements to go with their gourd?
They do.
They do?
Yeah.
Good. That's good to know.
Because,
I'm thinking about... Because, mine comes from my deep, long-time love of lava.
Mm.
And real flowing lava, and my my dedication and actually finally getting to a lava flow, but also my real love of Hawaii and of Hawaiian dance. So I'm bringing all those things, and that's how the gourd has finally talked to me, is in that way. It's got curves to it. I mean, it's a snake gourd, you've told me.
Yeah.
It has curves in the gourd itself that remind me of certain types of lava out in the south part of southeastern part of Big Island. So I could see them when I was walking out there last year. It's like, this looks like, this is my gourd. Anyway, not to get sidetracked. So this takes place, it's not that long of an event duration-wise. It's only 1 to 4. So really pack that energy in time-wise. You auction off, it's silent auction. People bid on the gourds on paper.
Yes.
Yep.
And what else happens?
Well, it's a very full 3 hours. Let's see, the food bank is open, so you get to explore the food bank, and there are tours of the food bank. The property is open. One of the great things about Calabash is that it is at the food bank, and so it draws people, many people who've never been to the food bank before. The grounds are open, the garden is open, and then we have a tent with the art pieces in it, and usually, I think this year they're going to be over 100. I think we have 100 artists already, isn't
it? Yes, we do.
Yeah. And there's gourd music, which is one of my favorite parts, is that we, have, 4 or 5 different musicians, some who've been there every year, and then every year I try to find new people.
What style of music do you focus on at Calabash?
Well, I have an affinity for African music, so I, it's been heavily weighted in the West African direction. But I had a birimbau player. That's a Brazilian instrument, and there's an example of that, I think, that I brought tonight, and a sitar player who's actually come a couple of times, because a traditional sitar is actually made out of a gourd.
Really?
It's made out of 2 gourds.
I did not know that.
It has 2 resonators, a large one at the bottom and a secondary one that's actually a gourd. And I'm trying to think if there have been other parts of the world, but I think the rest of it's been West Africa, and also Zimbabwe, with the mbira, which is a Zimbabwean instrument. But then in West Africa, there are all kinds of things that are made out of gourds. So.
Well, we've got something queued up. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but why don't we hear it, and then you can tell us.
Jamma ayam tong gan delege mog man salmi ikadun yana Jamma ayam tong gan delege mog man salmi ikadun yana
Doug, tell us about what we just hear.
We just heard Mamadou and Vanessa Sidibe, and they are a couple who live in Berkeley, and Mamadou is from Mali, and Vanessa is American, and they're a duo. He plays the Kamala Ngoni, which is a West African lute that has 10 strings, has a very large gourd at the bottom as a resonator. It's a very old instrument. It's several hundred years old, is what I've read, at least. And it's a stringed instrument. And, Mamadou and Vanessa have played at Calabash several times, and they also played at a Project Africa benefit that we had at Bistro V about a year ago.
Uh-huh. I remember
and they're
that.
Wonderful. They're completely wonderful. And he sings, and she plays. They also play the calabas, which is a large gourd that is cut in half, and it's played on a table. And the player wears a ring on one of his or her hands and hits the calabas with their ring.
Now, is a calabas the name of the instrument, or is it the name of the gourd?
It's actually the name of the instrument.
Oh, it is, okay.
In West Africa.
Princess Aisha, who was on 2 weeks ago, I think, on Mouthful, she brought back what she calls a calabas. I think, and she was selling them for a while at the farmer's market. And they're huge. They're like big, huge, but it's only half a gourd.
Yes, that's
and
right.
She gave me one, and it's just huge and gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah, they're beautiful. And in certain parts, I think in the south of Mali, in the Wassalou region, mm-hmm. They decorate them with cowrie shells. And the women are the ones that play them there, and they throw them in the air, and they do these sort of acrobatic, wonderful things when they're, you know, as they're playing them. Mm-hmm. They sort of toss them in the air and spin them, and then use them as a percussion instrument.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen that before. So they're a great duo. So, and they're going to be at this year's Calabash, and they perform regularly and have several CDs. And so
what else happens? You said we've got the tour, we've got the music.
Well, we left out, you know, for a Sonoma County event, we left out something that you can't leave out, which is the food and the wine.
Yes, we should definitely. That's on
we
my
have
notes
to talk
right
about
here.
That.
I think that we have some of the finest food and wine that you can get in Sonoma County, and it's freshly made. We have organic wines. It's really.
Now, do you prepare it there at the food bank?
We do a combination of preparing it ourselves and getting other caterers to donate food to us.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, the food has really been outstanding.
Who's going to participate this year, too? Is that a fair question off the top of your head?
Well, neither one of us does food. Rachel Gardner
Rachel handles
actually
that.
Handles the food, which is quite a chore. So it would be hard to say exactly at this point.
But you could probably more easily say who's providing some of the wine, I would think. I mean, Fry Vineyard and Preston.
And probably Hafner. And then there's a couple that lives in Forestville that has a Pinot Noir vineyard, and they're bringing some of their wine that's quite good.
What is that?
Do's and Me?
No, it's I don't remember the name.
Okay,
they
okay.
just established their winery.
Mm-hmm. There's so many new wineries in West County doing very nice small batches of Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm.
Tasted a number of them lately. About how many people? What's your maximum attendance?
Well, we probably have room for about 500 total. And we usually get pretty close to that, including all the volunteers. It takes a lot of people to produce this event. We probably have as many as 75 people working at the event. And then the artists come as well. So we probably get about 300 to 350 people that attend.
So you still have room for people. You're not selling out quite yet. You have more room.
Yeah.
We can talk about this and tell people, come on, get tickets.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. There's also, it seems like there's an awful lot to do at this event. I mean, people always say that. People are busy. There's always a demonstration area where someone is working on gourds, actually working on a piece or two, and there's usually some sort of a display. In the past, we've had musical instruments, we've had functional items made out of gourds, and then for 2 years now, I guess this is year number three, we have something called memorial gourds.
Yes.
And Rachel Gardner has initiated that, and that is where people are invited to actually create a work of art in memory of someone who has died of AIDS. And they attend a series of workshops where they work on their piece, but it's also sort of it's a therapeutic process and a grieving process where there's a lot of support in those workshop times among the people who do the workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the process is really important and healing for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the display that happens at Calabash is incredibly effective and
moving.
Yeah, deeply moving. Yeah.
So. About how big is it at this point?
Well, actually, this year it's going to be smaller. I think in the past there have been a dozen people or a dozen pieces, maybe 15, something like that. And I think it's going to be smaller this year, but there are going to be pieces from years past.
Mm-hmm.
So
one of the things that we did when we created Calabash is that we wanted to make sure that there was a connection between the HIV services and the festival. And the initial year, the festival was in memory of Liz Cunningham, and she was a well-known activist in the local AIDS community and was a commissioner on the Sonoma County Commission on AIDS. And she was also a fabulous gourd artist. And in the first year, we had a display of her work, and her family came, and the festival was done in memory of Liz. And so that highlighted quite a connection between gourds and Calabash, in addition to the fact that we grow them at Food for Thought. You know, that's another connection. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to say that since gourds are so big in Africa and part of the culture, and HIV is unfortunately also now a big part of the life and culture of Africa, that there's that connection that brings that to HIV as well.
Yeah.
And they originated in Africa, although uh-huh. there's still some discussion about whether that is a fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where else might they have? South America?
I think so. No one knows for sure, but mm-hmm. I think that historically it's been believed that they originated in Africa. Mm-hmm. It's the oldest cultivated crop that humans have...
A gourd is.
...co-evolved with. Yeah, gourds are. Yep. And they've spread... all over the place. Uh-huh. You know, they've been used by traditional people for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. As vessels primarily?
For everything.
For everything.
I mean, from vessels to musical instruments to clothing to headgear to masks to, you know, a lot of practical and functional mm-hmm. purposes.
And we use them for many of those purposes at the festival, including hats and as... serving utensils. A lot of the food is circulated inside these beautiful gourds. So you see a lot of those uses, the musical instruments, the artwork. It's quite, you know, quite a variety of different ways to see and use gourds.
What does it cost to go to Calabash?
If you buy your ticket in advance, it's $30, and the day of the festival, it's
$35. Okay. And one of the things you've said a couple of times, Doug, is that you've chosen plants to attract people into the garden. Mm. Does that mean you want visitors?
Absolutely.
Okay, so
yes.
You don't have to be, say, a client or someone who is specifically involved with the food bank. You can come by and see the garden?
Yeah.
Can people stop by and see the garden and buy tickets?
For the event,
uh-huh.
if the food bank is open, it's
okay.
open Tuesday through Saturday.
And what are the hours?
From 10 to 5.
So Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, you can stop by, spend some time in this really remarkable garden, and then buy tickets for Calabash.
Mm-hmm. And they can also call us. Our phone number is 887-1647.
That's 887-1647.
Yes, and we can do sales by phone.
Mm-hmm. What about a website?
Actually, Calabash has its own website.
Uh-huh. Are you taking auction bids on the website?
No, we're not.
Okay.
But the Calabash website is called Calabash Art Fest. So it's Calabash spelled out Calabash ArtFest.org. And there's a really wonderful website that shows lots of pieces from past years, shows all the artists and the sponsors. It has links to the artist's website. So it's a great way to see what Calabash is all about mm-hmm. and to see what gourd art looks like.
Back to stopping by to see the garden.
Mm-hmm.
What do people do? Do they just come and say hi and then just walk through the garden on their own? I mean, what is the right way to come and visit the garden?
Well, if they want to talk to gardeners, we're there on Saturdays. We have a volunteer day from 10 to 5, and the garden is largely tended by volunteers. We have a wonderful, devoted core of people who come every Saturday, some people who've been coming for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to talk to gardeners, they should come by on a Saturday. The food bank, as I said, is open Tuesday through Saturday, and it's fine to stroll in the gardens,
mm-hmm.
And I think it's even okay on closed days
mm-hmm.
for people
to come by.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that's really amazing right now is that there's an amaranth border.
Oh.
And it's sort of out of control. And I think amaranth is sort of a signature plant there now because it is so striking, it's so beautiful, and there's a lot of diversity of varieties.
Now, amaranth is, there's one variety that is called Love Lies Bleeding.
Right.
I mean, how can you not love a plant named Love Lies Bleeding.
Well, the thing that's amazing is that there are a number of other varieties that do the same thing and actually are even more spectacular, and those are weeping amaranths. And we have several of them there, and also we've been saving seed on amaranth, so we have a lot of crosses. So we have a weeping blonde amaranth, you know, sort of a blonde-colored seed head and flowers, and it weeps. And some of them are large, and they look like they really feel like a presence of some kind when you're standing in their company. I mean, it's truly incredible.
Now, speaking of presence, we were talking on the phone, and you referenced Findhorn. And you said you felt like the spirit of Findhorn was really alive in the garden. Have you been to Findhorn?
I haven't.
Okay, and Findhorn is a garden in Scotland.
In Scotland, right.
And it was in the 70s. I knew a lot of people who were going there. Suddenly, I think there were a couple of books that came out.
Yeah.
And there was the woman who started it.
Dorothy. She's actually an American, and she lives in the Northwest. And I am drawing a blank on her last name. But
well, supposedly.
Dorothy McLean. Okay. Yes.
The story was, it was fairies who were taking care of the garden. And people I knew claim to. I knew actually some people who went and lived at Findhorn for a year, knew several people, and I thought that I might get there, but I did not.
It's still alive. I mean, it's
and
still
is it still thriving?
Oh, absolutely.
So what's the deal with the fairies?
Well, plants have spirits,
okay,
you know, as do all living things, and I think depending on your intuitive nature, you can be in touch with that.
The spirits.
With the spirit of the plants.
Uh-huh.
And I think that you can feel it. You can feel it at the center. You can feel it at the mother garden.
And
I think you can feel it at Food for Thought. In fact, one of our volunteers just on Saturday said when she walked in, everyone was just a little bit overwhelmed by how the garden looked because it changes from week to week. And she said it's because of all of the love here. And that's what I've always felt, is that the food bank is an incredibly loving place. I mean, we have 500 volunteers that make that place run.
500, my gosh.
Yeah, and they're people who are of service. They're doing service there, and that's certainly true of the gardeners as well. And I think that the energy from that place radiates out from that building, and it's all over the property, and I think plants respond to that. I know they do. When people, cultivated food plants have had relationship with humans for thousands of years and would not exist without them. And so it's in their genetics to actually have relationship with people. And I think that plants, I mean, certainly when gardeners love their gardens, that's what creates green thumbs, you know, is that people are in relationship. They have a deep relationship and they have a love for their gardens and their plants. And I think that's what's going on at the food bank. And we hear it all the time that it really means a lot to the clients. That there not only that, I mean, simply that there's a garden there, but also then there are those who actually, many who appreciate the produce and many who harvest themselves and go out and pick things and use the produce and the flowers in their, you know, in their homes.
Now, have you found, and this is something I find about gardens and just things that grow in general, is that they can transform you. And I mean in a small, I'm not talking about maybe a big way, but I'm talking about the small transformations that can take place. You're having a bad day.
Yeah.
You're unhappy. You're depressed and can't find a reason. And you go into a garden and you're transformed. Do you witness that sort of thing going on with this garden?
I think so. Yeah. And in fact, I mean, you know, it reminds me of a woman once walked into the garden, I think it was a couple years ago, and there was a larkspur, a deep blue larkspur, and it was growing next to, I think it was an amaranth, and there was something about the color combination, and she stopped in her tracks and she said, "This gives me a reason to live." I mean, and because she was so struck by the beauty of, and you know, she was a client there. And I think it's really true. I mean, I don't know how you can't be hopeful when you work in a garden, because you're planting seeds, and you get to witness emergence and you know, germination and flourishing.
It seems like I've always been fascinated. You can take this little tiny seed and you just put it in the ground, and if you take care of it, like you say, flourishing, mm-hmm. it just produces. I mean, it just lives,
yeah.
and it lives in such an abundant way that I've always found that very magical.
Yeah,
and you can only imagine the nutritional value of the produce that comes out of an environment like that. Yesterday, they harvested 80 pounds of these beautiful tomatoes that you see in front of us. And
are these Marvel Stripe?
That one's called Ruby Gold.
Ruby Gold. And this is?
That is, it's actually called Farallon's Orange Beefsteak.
This is the one that must weigh at least 2.5 pounds.
It looks like a pumpkin.
Gorgeous. It does. At first I thought it was a small gourd.
And this is just an example of the produce that comes out of that garden. It's really just amazing, all the beans and the scallions and the just the wide variety of different things that are grown. And our clients that take these home and cook with them, the nutritional value is unlike anything you can buy anywhere.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about a little bit more about nutritional value from the point of view of what the bank does, how the bank actually functions. Let's pick up a time period. How often do clients come? Weekly?
We give out food once a week, and about two-thirds of our clients come in and pick up food, and then the other third are not able to get to the food bank either because they're homebound or they don't have transportation. So we deliver to those clients. All that delivery is done by volunteers. In fact, almost all the work in the food bank is done by volunteers. So clients come in, they sit down at the counter, and they're sitting across from a volunteer. They have a, part of it is the human contact. They sit down at the counter, they have a conversation with another person. Often they've built up a relationship with this person because this volunteer has been coming in week after week for years. They'll get a hug many times. And they see the variety of food that we have available. They place their order and the volunteer fills it for them. We have a lot of fresh produce that we give out. We emphasize foods that are very healthy. We do cooking classes. We have a nutritionist that meets with clients and helps them figure out what they need to eat in order to be healthy. We also offer a variety of different types of nutritional supplements, so the nutritionist can and prescribe a variety of different supplements for people to take depending on what kind of issues they're facing. So there's that weekly food. There's the nutritional supplements. We also have high-calorie supplements for people that need to gain weight. And for people that are too sick to cook, we have meals that we pick up in San Francisco from another agency, Project Open Hand. And those are prepared meals that people just put in the microwave, and then they have a really wonderful nutritional meal that's designed for people with HIV. So it's quite an array of services. And then one thing I mentioned earlier was that we have a group for HIV-positive women called the Positive Women's Group, and they meet about 6 times a year. And that's a great support group for them, and they do activities to just help them live with HIV.
Where do now the produce comes from the garden, but where does the other food that you're able to distribute? What are your resources for that?
We get food from a variety of different sources. A lot of it's donated. People, backyard gardeners, bring in food all the time. We get tons of fruit and vegetables that people grow specifically for us. Laguna Farms is an example of an organic farm that donates a lot of food to us. Grocery stores, we have pickups almost every day at various different bakeries and grocery stores. And then we buy a tremendous amount of food, wholesale food. We buy a lot of produce. It's very important to have a good diet with HIV because HIV is a disease of the immune system. And having a good diet is one of the best defenses against the disease. So we don't leave it up to chance. We have a very well-designed program of mm-hmm. food, and we make sure that we buy the things that people need to have to be healthy. So, it's quite a variety of different sources. We get around $150,000 of donated food every year. and then we buy about $200,000 worth of food, and then we grow food, and so it comes from all kinds of different places.
One thing I wanted to ask, and we're almost out of time, and we've played very little music. You two are just, the garden and the event are just so interesting. So you're going to have to go to Calabash if you want to hear more gourd music. The art pieces of art. What sort of price range do they sell for?
It's quite a range. Some of them are really cheap, and as little as $50.
Okay.
And then we have a sales area where they may even sell for less than that. Even in the we sell raw gourds probably as little as $5, and we've sold small pieces in the $10 to $25 range. The really good, the best pieces will sell for several hundred dollars up to, even $500 or more, mm-hmm. depending on how good they are. And, it's not just whether they're good, it's whether or not they strike a chord with people.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I realized I had no idea what the range was.
Mm-hmm. There have even been a few pieces that have sold for over $1,000, historically.
Tigerguns are covered in
1/3 at the door, 8-7-11, or in Stop Barton when the food bank is open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5. And the address is 6550 Railroad Avenue in Forestville. 6550 Railroad Avenue. And if you have never gone to the garden, you owe it to yourself. Trust me, it is really an extraordinarily special place. Everything Doug says about it and more is true. Ron Karp, Executive Director of Food for Thought Food Bank, thank you for taking the time. I know it's a really busy time for you, so I really appreciate you coming on to Mouthful.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And Doug, it's always great to see you. You're absolutely magical. I love what you do with plants. I always have. And congratulations on this just being a great event. And I hope it's really successful this year.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And thank you for listening. Thanks to Jeff, who's filling in for Lawrence tonight. Jeff, you rock. You can engineer Mouthful any time. Meet me back here next week, where you're going to have Paul Johnson, author of the book Fish Forever and founder and proprietor of the really fabulous Monterey Fish Market in Berkeley. See you next week on Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. I know she's cooking something good, so let's bow our heads and pray. Sing to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said.